From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Bolivia's President Evo Morales landed safely in Mexico, where he sought asylum. From this past weekend's military coup, his plane arrived in Mexico midday Tuesday. Today we're going to take a closer look at events in Bolivia over the past few days with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. It's pretty remarkable to me that it got this far. We were looking at it being a completely accomplished fact this morning, I guess, but there's an awful lot of pushback and indication of resistance that, this may not be over, beginning with some of the language that was used by President Morales in his arrival in Mexico Tuesday. And then there's a legislator who's a senior to the woman who is from the right wing, who's been claiming the right to be the next president. She's Jeanine Añez, and she's claimed that she's next in line, but in fact, she's not. There's a woman whose name is Susana Rivera Guzman, and you can find her, by the way. She's still tweeting. She is next in line behind Evo Morales. She made clear she is not resigning. And she is a member of MAS also. She is standing up for the presidency of Evo Morales and for the constitutional government in the face of the coup, much to her peril. And then there's the people. A lot of the social movements have said they're not laying down for this, and they're already in the streets. And there's an awful lot of power in the numbers there. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and these events in Bolivia, and I'm surprised that they did turn into an outright military coup. But yeah. Before we start talking about that, you covered a lot of what actually happened with Mark Sloboda the other day, and that gave people a very good breakdown of what actually happened over the weekend.
Right.
But perhaps it would help to look at the context, the regional context.
Sure.
And why did it happen now? Because these things don't just happen. And they happen according to a plan by the people who are going to carry out these events, which right. require an awful lot of organizing and an awful lot of money.
Yep.
And so, if you look at the context, why Bolivia, why now? Well, we recently saw the election result in Argentina, which was a result of the complete collapse on the terms that they were proposed of the policies of Argentina's government under Mauricio Macri.
Right.
And as you've said many, many times, in fact, everything went to plan, and the policies worked from the point of view of the wealthy elite. But that they are now out of power as a result of those policies destroying the lives and livelihoods and well-being
right.
of the majority of people in Argentina. So in that sense, the policies completely failed.
Right.
So in that context, you look at it from the point of view of the White House. They look at that and they say, oh, we lost Argentina. And they'll look at Ecuador and the popular uprising there, and they'll look at the popular uprising in Chile and the popular uprising in Haiti, and they must be saying to themselves, golly, we might lose Ecuador,
right.
or might lose Chile, or we might lose Haiti. So right. they're looking at that, and they're saying, we'd better do something about this. And what do they decide to do? And they decide, and also remember that their proteges, their narco-terrorist proteges in Colombia, suffered a tremendous electoral setback in the recent
that's
municipal
right.
election.
A couple of weeks ago, that's right.
And of course, Colombia is a country that's a complete basket case in terms of human rights concerns, with hundreds, and since President Duque took office, 189 social leaders and community leaders have been murdered. And we've commented on this before, but again, it's the case of if it's a US ally where all these human rights abuses are taking place,
right,
and where the economic collapse is taking place. Oh, well, that's all right.
Or it didn't happen. Right.
Or it didn't happen. And so you don't read about it in any detail in the media. There are no sudden emergency meetings in the Organization of American States Permanent Council. There are no reports from Amnesty International detailing the extent of the human rights abuses and the collapse in basic security for ordinary people. And so in that context, what do the United States authorities and their auxiliary services in the media and in the institutional world, like the UN Human Rights Office or the Organization of American States, or their auxiliary NGOs like Human Rights Watch or Amnesty International or the International Federation for Human Rights, or any of that kind of inquisitorial apparatus,
right,
that's imposed and deployed to attack targets of progressive governments that refuse to do. They don't even have to be especially socialist. Any government that refuses to do what the United States says becomes a target. And we're likely to see this over the next few months in the case of Mexico, because they have stood up and defended the fundamental principles of the United Nations, like non-intervention, self-determination, non-use of violence, and a respect for the constitutional integrity of a given country's government. Mexico has stood up for that.
That's right.
The Argentinian government that's going to take office on December the 10th has stood up for that.
That's correct.
And that the fact that Mexico and Argentina, and as we mentioned in a previous conversation, have had conversations about renewing the drive for regional integration, working on the basis of Latin America for Latin Americans without foreign interference, right? And the Caribbean too.
Right.
It's in that context that this coup has taken place in Bolivia.
Yep, and the response is an interesting illustration. It almost underlines it, because today the two heroes of the day that helped Morales get his plane get out of Bolivia and to Mexico were the president-elect of Argentina, president-elect Fernandez, and the president and foreign ministers of Mexico. In other words, those that are raising, you know, the banner of the resurgence of the left in Latin America, of the imminent resurgence of it, are the ones who had to step up today and did step up to ensure the safety of President Morales.
Yeah, and I think it's important also to underline very, very much and emphasize as much as possible that it's not just the fact that they may or may not be socialist, right? You
That's
can
correct.
Argue about Andrés Manuel López Obrador really a socialist, or is Alberto Fernández really progressive? And you can argue about that. But what's important is that they defended international law.
That's right.
Which none of the right-wing governments do. And
separate
the United
question,
States constantly
right.
violate.
That's right.
So, you
I
know,
mean, the coup itself,
and I think, I happen to think that you're right. I happen yeah. to think that López Obrador and Alberto Fernández and his soon-to-be Vice President Cristina Fernández de Kirchner, I think they do represent the progressive forces and socialist forces and up to a point revolutionary forces, because in this context, defending international law and telling the truth
is revolutionary. That's right. That's right. Let me just sidebar with you for a minute on this particular question of how exactly these things are portrayed. Because, you know, one of the things we just said was that if the United States does it, it didn't happen. I'm looking at the moment, this moment's edition of the New York Times online. Okay, the front page. We have, from the top, Supreme Court appears ready to let Trump end the Dreamers program. Catholic bishops elect Hispanic immigrant as president for the first time in Los Angeles. What is DACA? How did it end up in the Supreme Court? Republicans plan simple impeachment defense for Trump. When Watergate was appointment TV, the SoftBank effect, how $100 billion left workers in a hole, five polling results that may change the way you think about electability, Michael Bloomberg in Arkansas, Mark Sanford ends his challenge to Trump for 2020. You ever heard of him? I don't even know who that is. Behind Trump's dealings with Turkey, and then Allison Roman cooks. Not a word about the coup d'etat that just took place in Bolivia by the United States, and the fact that, I don't know, 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago, the president of Bolivia, escaping a military coup in his country, landed in Mexico. Now, you know, if Mexico raised the price of raisins by 3 cents a pound, you would have front page debate over whether Trump acted fast enough to punish them, and Trump acting talking about building an extra wall for raisins or something. And that would be, you know, the conversation of the moment. But the fact that President Evo Morales had to flee his own military because the United States essentially bought it and aimed its guns at him, and that he had to go through all the things he went through today with Ecuador, half a dozen countries granting and then refusing flyover rights and landing rights for refueling to his plane. It's the same thing that, this doesn't happen to anybody. This is what they did to him back in 2013. It's like he's a black guy driving through New Jersey or something. You know, it's the same thing that they did there where you had like DWB, where the term was, you know, first coined that, if you were black and driving in the New Jersey Turnpike, you were going to get pulled over and tossed at gunpoint. You know, he flies a plane. He's an indigenous president. He gets treated the same way. Not a word in the newspaper about this.
Right. Yeah. Flying while indigenous.
I said newspaper. New York Times.
But this is all of a piece, isn't it? With everything that's happened in over the last however long you want to say. And it's true in Venezuela, it's true in Nicaragua, it's true, but very much true about events elsewhere. And everything gets misrepresented. And if it's too difficult to misrepresent, like burning down the house of Evo Morales' sister, or threatening Evo Morales' ministers with death, or threatening their families with death if the ministers don't resign.
Right.
If you can't misrepresent that, so you have to kind of not cover it at all. And that happened in Nicaragua during the events of 2018.
Yep.
And exactly the same thing. Government offices and houses of government functionaries were burned down, ransacked, looted. Yep. People were attacked. Policemen were killed, and their bodies set on fire. Ordinary Sandinista supporters were attacked and set on fire. Same thing happened in Venezuela to an Afro-descendant Chavez supporter. He was caught and set on fire.
Yep.
And there were various similar incidents. Attacks on the police in Venezuela, a notorious event in which at least a dozen, maybe more than 20 police officers on motorcycles were attacked and set on fire in an ambush. And of course, none of that ever happened. And it just didn't get covered. None of that got covered.
Look at what's getting covered about Ukraine right now. And ask yourself, how much have you heard about the fire in Odessa, where they burned to death union workers in their own brick oven building because they didn't support the coup government in Kiev? The coup that was initiated, directed, funded, and actualized by the United States government, including on the telephone, on a taped telephone call.
Yes, I know. And what's so ironic is that you get the New York Times, the liberal flagship of people in the United States, supporting Nazis.
Right.
In the Ukraine, and they're not neo-Nazis. These are
actual Nazis, right? That's right.
And so
they goose-step and everything.
But also, and you get these the papers like The Guardian that are ever so quick to champion phony reports from Amnesty International, and their coverage of that. I remember their coverage of that. It was on May 5th, 2014, I think, and I remember trying to find out what had happened. I was looking in the mainstream media, and the Guardian's coverage was they were blaming the people that got burned to death.
The people that got murdered.
And the Guardian, the New York Times, the Washington Post, if the Nazis are supported by the United States, then, or if the extremist pseudo-Islamist terrorists, so-called moderate rebels, are supported by the United States, then that's okay with the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Guardian and Le Monde and Die Welt and all of them.
Actually, they're proving your point. The New York Times posted within the last hour at the bottom of the front page under the heading "In Other News," okay? Bolivia crisis shows the blurry line between coup and uprising. And here's what they said. The Cold War binary of bad coups and good popular revolts no longer applies.
Well, yeah, and that also, and that brings us very much to the point that, I know my friend Jorge Capelan, who's a brilliant analyst of Latin American affairs, he wrote a piece recently in which he said you can very clearly tell the difference between a coup and a popular uprising.
Right.
Because in a popular uprising, you don't have people armed with
tanks and uniforms
and handheld mortars.
Right.
And the most that they'll have will be maybe stones.
That's right.
At the outside, they might have Molotov cocktails.
Right.
But if you see people that are armed, that are carrying firearms,
right,
and are engaged in attacks on government buildings, setting fire to government buildings, looting public buildings,
right,
attacking other citizens, and setting them on fire, and you do not get that in a popular uprising.
Right.
Right. And so in Ecuador and Chile, you have a situation where demonstrators protesting against neoliberal measures found themselves in confrontation with very serious, heavy repression from the police, murderous repression,
right,
especially in Chile. And in Chile, the protests are continuing, and there's the repression has got, if anything, worse than it was a couple of weeks ago. But that hasn't stopped the protesters. Now, in those countries, the protests were against neoliberal measures, and they were triggered by specific increases in transport costs in particular, and in fuel costs in general. In Chile, it was an increase in transport costs on their metro, but that was just a trigger for resistance and protest against a long history of neoliberal measures that are attacking the basic well-being and livelihood and prospects for a decent life,
right,
of the majority of people in Chile at this point.
Well, I mean, they kind of invented neoliberalism on the backs of Chile, right? I mean, they made the economy scream so they could do that,
right? And but what do you have in Bolivia? And what kind of popular protest is going to protest against the incredible redistribution of wealth and the incredible improvements in health, social security?
Right.
And just a month or so ago, and the government was distributing resources and I've forgotten what they call it. They call it a bono, a kind of a bonus, and to students for their school year. Where in what right-wing country does that happen?
Right.
So and the protests in Bolivia are all about, and it's a complete cynicism, deeply deceitful, of the New York Times to talk about a popular uprising.
Right.
When the uprising is led by oligarch figures like this character Luis Fernando Camacho,
right,
who's an outright racist. If
right.
he were in Ukraine, he'd be a Nazi.
Right.
And he's a very prominent business person. His family is one of the wealthiest families in Santa Cruz, which is a department of Bolivia. And actually, I was surprised to learn the other day that it actually occupies almost a third of Bolivia's national territory.
Right.
And that explains something that always puzzled me, why Santa Cruz was always so important in
right.
these conflicts that sporadically occur in Bolivia.
Yeah.
And so this guy, this oligarch, it's like as if Michael Bloomberg took to the streets in
right.
New York and
Right.
It was declared a popular uprising. You know, there they are, Michael right. Bloomberg and George Soros, and they're at the head of a popular uprising.
Right.
How ridiculous.
I mean, if they move the White House to Scarsdale, okay, or Bronxville, and then you had, you know, the millionaires and billionaires that live there march on the White House, you know, because, I don't know, maybe Trump imposed a transfer tax on stock sales.
Right.
That, you know, those outraged people, coupled with, you know, three or four generals calling the White House and saying, okay, buddy, either come out now or we're coming in with the tanks, that would constitute right. a popular uprising with, you know, in the language of the New York Times, where the binary of bad coups and good popular revolts no longer applies because we now have good coups and bad popular revolts. So there's one other point. Before we go somewhere, I want to make sure that this gets said and reported to people. As it stands right now, by the way, it had earlier been reported that the entire chain of succession from Morales to an opposition figure who's the second vice president in the second house of the Congress, that everyone had resigned and that this woman, Azez, was intending to take office and that, in fact, she had a clear shot. As it turns out, one of the Hamas vice presidents who is ahead of Azez in the line of succession did not resign. And as of this afternoon, we're talking about 3:30 New York time on Tuesday, is intending to be sworn in as the president of Bolivia. And that is still hanging in the air. And so people might want to follow that.
You just have to salute that person's bravery.
Yep.
And they are taking their life in their hands.
That's right. Absolutely.
I can't quite take that in. That is such stunning courage.
You know?
Currently the process is supposedly that the legislature has to accept.
That's correct.
Evo Morales's letter of resignation and the letter of resignation of Alvaro Garcia Linera.
Right, and Mas has a majority of seats in the legislature, and Mas is boycotting the legislature. They're not going in to take the vote.
Okay, that explains a lot, because they, without a quorum, anything that the right wing try to do is completely illegal.
That's correct.
And Mas, I have 2/3 of the seats I think they have a similar majority in both houses.
It's big.
In both the Senate and the lower house. So if Mas say, well, we're not participating in that farce, or we're not participating because we can't guarantee our personal safety, then anything that happens now is illegal.
Right.
And so what's going to happen then? Because at the same time as that, I think what we've done now is we've shifted from the overall regional context into what's happening right now, okay?
Right.
And I think if people have the chance, they should try and listen to your conversation with Mark yesterday, I think it was, so they get a better idea of what actually happened over the weekend. But what's happening now is that, and thank you for that bit of information, Don. I wasn't up to date with that.
Right.
What that means is that there is a very, very serious, real constitutional crisis that the opposition can't resolve. They can't pretend that this is a kind of, there's been a legitimate constitutional succession because Evo Morales resigned under duress, and everybody else resigned under duress. They,
right.
Previously, they could kind of claim, oh, well, everybody's resigned, so now it's our turn.
Right.
Well, they can't do that now.
That's correct.
They can't do that now. And at the same time that they have this constitutional crisis, Dom, they've got a crisis in the streets. And this comes back to what's happening in Nicaragua, what's happening in Venezuela. If you have a situation where 35 to 40% of the population are solid supporters of the ruling government political party, and there are 10 or 15% of floating voters that will always vote for it, what you have is a situation where the right wing are going to have to kill thousands of people, like they did in Chile,
right,
and Pinochet, if they're going to make their coup stick.
Right.
So That's right. That what are we going to see now? And that in Nicaragua, the reason the right wing failed was because the army and the police stayed loyal to the government.
Right.
Ditto in Venezuela, same in Venezuela. Yep, so what you have in Bolivia is the similar situation to what happened in Honduras in 2009, where first the army and then the police turned on the government and then turned on their own people. Now, in Honduras, they didn't murder wholesale people in the streets, but Honduras has a very different political tradition in that sense to Bolivia. And in Bolivia, you've got, for example, just to give you an example, you've got this very militant community in the city of El Alto, just out, not far from La Paz. You've got mining communities who are perfectly ready to throw dynamite, literally, at the police and at the military if the police attack them. They will act in self-defense, and the police will find themselves getting blown up with dynamite. And that's Bolivia. That's the history of Bolivia. Now, if you look at what happened between 2000 and 2005, it is absolutely insane of the right wing to think that the grassroots movement that happened to be led by Evo Morales, I mean, that's just a historical accident.
Right.
The popular organizations that mobilized to overthrow governments in 2000 and 2005, they suffered a lot of deaths under Sanchez, what's his name, Gonzalo Sanchez de Lozada.
Yeah.
And that individual is now a criminal who took refuge in the United States. Mm. Carlos Mesa took office after De Lozada, but he was forced to resign. Now, what the right wing seem to think is that all that's just gone away.
Right.
Well, it hasn't gone away.
Of course it hasn't.
It hasn't gone away. And they're going to have to deal with that, and they're going to have to take a historic decision for them. And are they going to massacre? How many people are they going to massacre in order to make their coup work?
And then... The question is also going to be,
Just quick.
Go ahead.
The other question then is, will all the rank and file of the Bolivian army are indigenous people?
Right.
Are they going to take orders from their officers to murder their own sisters and brothers?
Right.
Well, that's not likely.
Right. I mean, this is a question, will President Morales speak to those soldiers over the heads of their officers? He is the commander-in-chief. And he is one of them. And the other question is, and this is a question that's got to be raised everywhere in the region, really. Okay, so they start killing in Bolivia because for the moment they have the opportunity to do it, and so they take advantage of that. Well, throughout the region there is an uneven distribution of forces. There are plenty of places in the region where the right wing can come under physical attack as well. And will the left continue to play legalistic games while fascists murder them? And I'm not talking about the play-pretend fascists that Democrats and fake leftists talk about in the United States around Trump and people like that, but actual fascists like the kind that burn people in Odessa and that might be murdering people in Bolivia.
Luis Fernando Camacho.
Okay. Will the left on the streets of Brazil or Argentina or Venezuela or other places allow the right wing to walk among them undisturbed while this is what's happening in Bolivia? That's a question that has to be raised and dealt with at some point, too, historically.
Yeah, I know. The political leadership among the progressive forces in Latin America are absolutely consistent in avoiding violence to achieve what they want. They took a decision back in the 90s. We're going to beat the United States at their own electoral game.
Yeah,
and they did.
They did a hell of a job too.
One of the results of that is these successive coups.
Right. Thank you for your time and your insight. We'll speak about this again next week, Tony. Thanks.
Thanks a million, Don. Look forward to... Let's hope we have better news next week.
Hope so, too. Yep.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.